Good evening. You're listening to KRBD Ketchikan, and I'm Rebecca Brown, your host for this evening. We are Reading the Classics, your weekly time of listening to your library ladies read from the public domain. We have been reading now for a few weeks, The Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Before that, we read the wonderful book, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. But we're just going to continue on this week with The Wizard of Oz. We are well into the book, and I just wanted to note that if you have missed our previous readings, or any of our previous readings, whether it's this book or some of the past ones that we've done, you can check those out on KRBD's website, because they have almost all of our recordings there. And the best way I've found to locate those recordings is to just enter in KRBD Reading the Classics into your search engine of choice, and it will take you exactly to the page that the wonderful Maria Dudzak has set up for us, and you can listen to our recordings there. And so it's a great chance to listen to wonderful books from the public domain that are available for your listening pleasure now. So let's just dive right in. We are once again reading The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum, and we'll just start a couple of sentences prior to where we left off last week with Lisa Pearson. Dorothy found herself riding easily between the two of the biggest monkeys, one of them the king himself. They had made a chair of their hands and were careful not to hurt her. "Why do you have to obey the charm of the golden cap?" she asked. "That is a long story," answered the king with a laugh. "But as we have a long journey before us, I will pass the time by telling you about it, if you wish."
"I shall be glad to hear it," she replied.
"Once," began the leader, "we were a free people, living happily in the great forest, flying from tree to tree, eating nuts and fruit, and doing just as we pleased without calling anybody master. Perhaps some of us were rather too full of mischief at times, flying down to pull the tails of animals that had no wings, chasing birds and throwing nuts at the people who walked in the forest. But we were careless and happy and full of fun, and enjoyed every minute of the day. This was many years ago, long before Oz came out of the clouds to rule over this land. There lived then, away at the north, a beautiful princess, who was also a powerful sorceress. All her magic was used to help the people, and she was never known to hurt anyone who was good. Her name was Gaylette, and she lived in a handsome palace built from great rocks of ruby. Everyone loved her. But her greatest sorrow was that she could find no one to love in return, since all the men were much too stupid and ugly to mate with one so beautiful and wise. At last, however, she found a boy who was handsome and manly and wise beyond his years. Gaylette made up her mind that when he grew to be a man, she would make him her husband. So she took him to her ruby palace and used all her magic powers to make him as strong and good and lovely as any woman could wish. When he grew to manhood, Kulala, as he was called, was said to be the best and wisest man in all the land, while his manly beauty was so great that Gaylette loved him dearly and hastened to make everything ready for the wedding. My grandfather at that time, the king of the winged monkeys, which lived in the forest near Gaylette's palace, and the old fellow loved a joke better than a good dinner. One day, just before the wedding, my grandfather was flying out with his band when he saw Kulala walking beside the river. He was dressed in a rich costume of pink silk and purple velvet, and my grandfather thought he would see what he could do. At his word, the band flew down and seized Kulala, carried him in their arms until they were over the middle of the river, and then dropped him into the water. "Swim out, my fine fellow," cried my grandfather, "and see if the water has spotted your clothes." Kulala was much too wise not to swim, and he was not in the least spoiled at all by his good fortune. He laughed when he came to the top of the water and swam in to shore. But when Gaylette came running out to him, she found his silks and velvet all ruined by the water. The princess was angry, and she knew, of course, who did it. She had all the winged monkeys brought before her,
and she said at first that their wings should be tied, and they should be treated as they had treated Kulala, and dropped into the river. But my grandfather pleaded hard, for he knew the monkeys would drown in the river with their wings tied, and Kulala said a kind word for them also, so that Gaylette finally spared them, on condition that the winged monkeys should ever after do 3 times the bidding of the owner of the golden cap. This cap had been made for a wedding present to Kulala, and it is said to have cost the princess half her kingdom. Of course, my grandfather and all the other monkeys at once agreed to the condition, and that is how it happens that we are 3 times the slaves of the owner of the golden cap, whoever he may be. And what became of them? Asked Dorothy, who had been greatly interested in the story. Kulala, being the first owner of the golden cap, replied the monkey, he was the first to lay his wishes upon us. As his bride could not bear the sight of us, he called us all to him in the forest after he had married her, and ordered us always to keep where she could never again set eyes on a winged monkey, which we were glad to do, for we were all afraid of her. This was all we ever had to do until the golden cap fell into the hands of the wicked witch of the West, who made us enslave the Winkies, and afterward drive Oz himself out of the land of the West. Now the golden cap is yours, and 3 times you have the right to lay your wishes upon us. As the Monkey King finished his story, Dorothy looked down and saw the green, shining walls of the Emerald City before them. She wondered at the rapid flight of the monkeys, but was glad the journey was over. The strange creatures set the travelers down carefully before the gate of the city. The king bowed low to Dorothy, and then flew swiftly away, followed by all his band. "That was a good ride," said the girl. "Yes, and a quick way out of our troubles," replied the lion. "How lucky it was you brought away that wonderful cap." Chapter 15. The Discovery of Oz the Terrible. The 4 travelers walked up to the great gate of the Emerald City and rang the bell. After ringing several times, it was opened by the same guardian of the gates they had met before.
"What? Are you back again?" he asked in surprise.
"Do you not see us?" answered the Scarecrow.
"But I thought you had gone to visit the Wicked Witch of the West."
"We did visit her," said the Scarecrow.
"And she let you out again?" asked the man in wonder.
"She could not help it, for she is melted," explained the Scarecrow.
"Melted? Well, that is good news indeed," said the man. "Who melted her?"
"It was Dorothy," said the lion gravely.
"Good gracious," replied the man,
and he bowed very low indeed before her. Then he led them into his little room and locked the spectacles from the great box on all their eyes, just as he had done before. Afterward, they passed on through the gate into the Emerald City, and when the people heard from the guardian of the gates that they had melted the Wicked Witch of the West, they all gathered around the travelers and followed them in a great crowd to the Palace of Oz. The soldier with the green whiskers was still on guard before the door, but he let them in at once, and they were again met by the beautiful green girl, who showed each of them to their old rooms at once, so they might rest until the great Oz was ready to receive them. The soldier had the news carried straight to Oz that Dorothy and the other travelers had come back again after destroying the Wicked Witch, but Oz made no reply. They thought the great wizard would send for them at once, but he did not. They had no word from him the next day, nor the next, nor the next. The waiting was tiresome and wearing, and at last they grew vexed that Oz should treat them in so poor a fashion after sending them to undergo hardships and slavery. So the Scarecrow at last asked the green girl to take another message to Oz, saying if he did not let them in to see him at once, they would call the winged monkeys to help them and find out whether he kept his promises or not. When the wizard was given this message, he was so frightened that he sent word for them to come to the throne room at 9:04 the next morning. He had once met the winged monkeys in the land of the West, and he did not wish to meet them again. The 4 travelers passed a sleepless night, each thinking of the gift Oz had promised to bestow on him. Dorothy fell asleep only once, and then she dreamed she was in Kansas, where Aunt Em was telling her how glad she was to have her little girl home again. Promptly, at 9 o'clock the next morning, the green-whiskered soldier came to them, and 4 minutes later, they all went into the throne room of the Great Oz. Of course, each one of them expected to see the wizard in the shape he had taken before, and all were greatly surprised when they looked about and saw no one at all in the room. They kept close to the door and closer to one another, for the stillness of the room was more dreadful than any of the forms they had seen Oz take. Presently, they heard a voice, seeming to come from somewhere near the top of the great dome, and it said solemnly,
"I am Oz, the great and terrible. Why do you seek me?"
They looked again in every part of the room, and then, seeing no one, Dorothy asked, "Where are you?"
"I am everywhere," answered the voice, "but to the eyes of common mortals, I am invisible. I will now seat myself upon my throne, that you may converse with me."
Indeed, the voice seemed just then to come straight from the throne itself, so they walked toward it and stood in a row while Dorothy said, "We have come to claim our promise, O Oz."
"What promise?" asked Oz.
"You promised to send me back to Kansas when the Wicked Witch was destroyed," said the girl. "And you promised to give me brains," said the Scarecrow.
"And you promised to give me a heart," said the Tin Woodsman.
"And you promised to give me courage," said the Cowardly Lion.
"Is the Wicked Witch really destroyed?" asked the voice.
And Dorothy thought it trembled a little.
"Yes," she answered. "I melted her with a bucket of water."
"Dear me," said the voice, "how sudden. Well, come to me tomorrow, for I must have time to think it over."
"You've had plenty of time already," said the Tin Man angrily.
"We shan't wait a day longer," said the Scarecrow. "You must keep your promises to us," exclaimed Dorothy. The Lion thought it might be as well to frighten the wizard, and so he gave a large, loud roar, which was so fierce and dreadful that Toto jumped away from him in alarm and tipped over the screen that stood in the corner. As it fell with a crash, they looked that way, and the next moment all of them were filled with wonder. For they saw, standing in just the spot the screen had hidden, a little old man, with a bald head and a wrinkled face, who seemed to be as much surprised as they were. The Tin Woodman, raising his axe, rushed toward the little man and cried out, "Who are you?"
"I am Oz, the great and terrible," said the little man in a trembling voice. "But don't strike me. Please don't. I'll do anything you want me to do."
Our friends looked at him in surprise and dismay.
"I thought Oz was a great head," said Dorothy.
"And I thought Oz was a lovely lady," said the Scarecrow.
"And I thought Oz was a terrible beast," said the Tin Woodman.
"And I thought Oz was a ball of fire," exclaimed the Lion.
"No, you are all wrong," said the little man meekly. "I have been making believe."
"Making believe?" cried Dorothy. "Are you not a great wizard?"
"Hush, my dear," he said. "Don't speak so loud, or you will be overheard and I should be ruined. I'm supposed to be a great wizard."
"And aren't you?" she asked.
"Not a bit of it, my dear. I'm just a common man."
"You're more than that," said the Scarecrow in a grieved tone. "You're a humbug."
"Exactly so," declared the little man, rubbing his hands together as if it pleased him. "I am a humbug."
"But this is terrible," said the Tin Woodman. "How shall I ever get my heart?"
"Or I my courage?" asked the Lion.
"Or I my brains?" wailed the Scarecrow, wiping the tears from his eyes with his coat sleeve.
"My dear friends," said Oz, "I pray you not to speak of these little things. Think of me and the terrible trouble I'm in at being found out."
"Doesn't anyone else know you're a humbug?" asked Dorothy.
"No one knows but you four and myself," replied Oz. "I have fooled everyone so long I thought I should never be found out. It was a great mistake my ever letting you into the throne room. Usually I will not ever see my subjects, so they believe I am something terrible. But
I don't understand, said Dorothy in bewilderment. How was it that you appeared to me as a great head?
That was one of my tricks, answered Oz. Step this way, please, and I will tell you all about it.
He led the way into a small chamber in the rear of the throne room, and they all followed him. He pointed to one corner in which lay the great head, made out of many thicknesses of paper, and with a carefully painted face.
This I hung from the ceiling by a wire, said Oz.
I stood behind the screen and pulled a thread to make the eyes move and the mouth open.
But how about the voice? She inquired.
Oh, I am a ventriloquist, said the little man, and I can throw the sound of my voice wherever I wish, so you thought it was coming out of the head. Here are the other things I used to deceive you.
He showed the scarecrow the dress and the mask he had worn when he seemed to be the lovely lady, and the Tin Woodman saw his terrible beast was nothing but a lot of skins, sewn together with slats to keep their sides out. As for the ball of fire, the false wizard had hung that also from the ceiling. It was really a ball of cotton, but when oil was poured upon it, the ball burned fiercely.
Really, said the Scarecrow, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for being such a humbug.
I am, I certainly am, answered the little man sorrowfully. But it was the only thing I could do. Sit down, please. There are plenty of chairs, and I will tell you my story.
So they sat down and listened while he told the following tale.
I was born in Omaha.
Why, that isn't very far from Kansas, cried Dorothy.
No, but it's farther from here, he said, shaking his head at her sadly. When I grew up, I became a ventriloquist, and at that I was very well trained by a great master. I can imitate any kind of bird or beast.
Here he mewed so like a kitten that Toto pricked up his ears and looked everywhere to see where she was.
After a time, continued Oz, I tired of that and became a balloonist.
What is that? Asked Dorothy.
A man who goes up in a balloon on circus day, so as to draw a crowd of people together and get them to pay to see the circus, he explained.
Oh, she said, I know.
Well, one day I went up in a balloon and the ropes got twisted so that I couldn't come down again. It went way up above the clouds, so far that a current of air struck it and carried it many, many miles away. For a day and a night I traveled through the air, and on the morning of the second day I woke and found the balloon floating over a strange and beautiful country. It came down gradually, and I was not hurt a bit. But I found myself in the midst of a strange people who, seeing me come from the clouds, thought I was a great wizard. Of course I let them think so, because they were afraid of me and promised to do anything I wished them to. Just to amuse myself and keep the good people busy, I ordered them to build this city and my palace, and they did it all willingly and well. Then I thought, as the country was so green and beautiful, I would call it the Emerald City, and to make the name fit better, I put green spectacles on all the people so that everything they saw was green.
But isn't everything here green? Asked Dorothy.
No more than in any other city, replied Oz. But when you wear green spectacles, why, of course everything you see looks green to you. The Emerald City was built a great many years ago, for I was a young man when the balloon brought me here, and I am a very old man now. But my people have worn green glasses on their eyes for so long that most of them think it really is an Emerald City, and it certainly is a beautiful place, abounding in jewels and precious metals and every good thing that is needed to make one happy. I have been good to the people, and they like me, but ever since this palace was built, I have shut myself up and would not see any of them. One of my greatest fears was the witches, for while I had no magical powers at all, I soon found out that the witches were really able to do wonderful things. There were four of them in this country, and they ruled the people who live in the north and south and east and west. Fortunately, the witches of the north and south were good, and I knew they would do me no harm. But the witches of the east and west were terribly wicked, and had they not thought I was more powerful than they themselves, they would surely have destroyed me.
As it was, I lived in deadly fear of them for many years, so you can imagine how pleased I was when I heard your house had fallen on the Wicked Witch of the East. When you came to me, I was willing to promise anything if you would only do away with the other witch. But now that you have melted her, I am ashamed to say that I cannot keep my promises.
I think you are a very bad man indeed, said Dorothy.
Oh, no, my dear. I really am a very good man. But I'm a very bad wizard, I must admit.
Can't you give me any brains? Asked the Scarecrow.
You don't need them. You are learning something every day. A baby has brains, and it doesn't know much. Experience is the only thing that brings knowledge, and the longer you are on Earth, the more experience you are sure to get.
That may all be true, said the Scarecrow, but I shall be very unhappy unless you give me brains.
The false wizard looked at him carefully.
Well, he said with a sigh, I am not much of a magician, as I said, but if you will come to me tomorrow morning, I will stuff your head with brains. I cannot tell you how to use them. However, you must find that out for yourself.
Oh, thank you, cried the Scarecrow. I will find a way to use them, never fear.
But how about my courage? Asked the lion anxiously.
You have plenty of courage, I am sure, answered Oz. All you need is confidence in yourself. There is no living thing that is not afraid when it faces danger. True courage is in facing danger when you are afraid, and that kind of courage you have in plenty.
Perhaps I have, but I'm scared just the same, said the lion.
I shall really be very unhappy unless you give me the sort of courage that makes one forget he is afraid.
Very well, I will give you that sort of courage tomorrow, replied Oz.
How about my heart? Replied the Tin Woodman. Why, as for that, answered Oz, I think you are wrong to want a heart. It makes most people unhappy. If you only knew it, you are in luck not to have a heart.
That must be a matter of opinion, said the Tin Woodman. For my part, I will bear all the unhappiness without a murmur if you will give me that heart.
Very well, answered Oz meekly. Come to me tomorrow and you shall have a heart. I have played wizard for so many years that I may as well continue the part a little longer.
And now, said Dorothy, how am I to get back to Kansas?
We shall have to think about that, replied the little man. Give me 2 or 3 days to consider the matter, and I'll try to find a way to carry you over the desert. In the meantime, you shall be treated as my guests, and while you live in the palace, my people will wait upon you and obey your slightest wish. There is only one thing I ask in return for my help, such as it is. You must keep my secret and tell no one I am a humbug.
They agreed to say nothing of what they had learned and went back to their rooms in high spirits. Even Dorothy had hope that the great and terrible humbug, as she called him, would find a way to send her back to Kansas, and if he did, she was willing to forgive him everything. Chapter 16. The Magic Art of the Great Humbug. Next morning, the Scarecrow said to his friends, "Congratulate me. I am going to Oz to get my brains at last. When I return, I shall be as other men are."
"I have always liked you as you were," said Dorothy simply.
"It is kind of you to like a scarecrow," he replied, "but surely you will think more of me when you hear the splendid thoughts my new brain is going to turn out." Then he said goodbye to them all in a cheerful voice and went to the throne room, where he rapped upon the door.
"Come in," said Oz.
The Scarecrow went in and found the little man sitting down by the window, engaged in deep thought.
"I have come for my brains," remarked the Scarecrow a little uneasily.
"Oh, yes, sit down in that chair, please," replied Oz. "You must excuse me for taking your head off, but I shall have to do it in order to put your brains in their proper place."
"That's all right," said the Scarecrow. "You are quite welcome to take my head off, as long as it will be a better one when you put it on again."
So the wizard unfastened his head and emptied out the straw. Then he entered the back room and took up a measure of bran, which he mixed with a great many pins and needles.
Having shaken them together thoroughly, he filled the top of the Scarecrow's head with the mixture and stuffed the rest of the space with straw to hold it in place. When he had fastened the Scarecrow's head on his body again, he said to him, "Hereafter you shall be a great man, for I have given you a lot of brand new brains." The Scarecrow was both pleased and proud at the fulfillment of his greatest wish, and having thanked Oz warmly, he went back to his friends. Dorothy looked at him curiously. His head was quite bulged out at the top with brains. "How do you feel?" she asked. "I feel wise, indeed," he answered earnestly. "When I get used to my brains, I shall know everything." "Why, those are needles and pins sticking out of your head," the Tin Woodman said. "That is proof that he is sharp," remarked the Lion. "Well, I must go to Oz and get my heart," said the Woodman. So he walked to the throne room and knocked at the door. "Come in," said Oz, and the Woodman entered and said, "I have come for my heart." "Very well," answered the little man, "but I shall have to cut a hole in your breast so I can put your heart in the right place. I hope it won't hurt you." "Oh, no," answered the Woodman. "I shall not feel it at all." So Oz brought a pair of tinner shears and cut a small square hole in the left side of the Tin Woodman's breast. Then, going to the chest of drawers, he took out a pretty heart made entirely of silk and stuffed with sawdust. "Isn't it a beauty?" he asked. "It is indeed," replied the Woodman, who was greatly pleased. "But is it a kind heart?" "Oh, very," answered Oz. He put the heart in the Woodman's breast and then replaced the square of tin, smoldering it neatly where it had been cut. "There," said he, "now you have a heart that any man might be proud of. I'm sorry I had to put a patch on your breast, but it really couldn't be helped."
"Never mind the patch," exclaimed the happy Woodman. "I am very grateful to you and shall never forget your kindness."
"Don't speak of it," replied Oz. Then the Tin Woodman went back to his friends, who wished him every joy on account of his good fortune. The Lion now walked to the throne room and knocked at the door. "Come in," said Oz.
"I have come for my courage," announced the Lion, entering the room.
"Very well," answered the little man. "I will get it for you." He went to a cupboard and, reaching up to a high shelf, took down a square green bottle, the contents of which he poured into a green gold dish, beautifully carved. Placing this before the Cowardly Lion, who sniffed at it as if he did not like it, the wizard said, "Drink."
"What is it?" asked the Lion.
"Well," answered Oz, "if it were inside of you, it would be courage. You know, of course, that courage is always inside one, so this really cannot be called courage until you have swallowed it. Therefore, I advise you to drink it as soon as possible." The Lion hesitated no longer, but drank till the dish was empty. "How do you feel now?" asked Oz.
"Full of courage," replied the Lion, who went joyfully back to his friends to tell them of his good fortune.
Oz, left to himself, smiled to think of his success in giving the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman and the Lion exactly what they thought they wanted. "How can I help being a humbug," he said, "when all these people make me do things that everybody knows can't be done? It was easy to make the Scarecrow and the Lion and the Woodman happy because they imagined I could do anything. But it will take more imagination to carry Dorothy back to Kansas, and I'm sure I don't know how it can be done."
And we'll end there this week. That is the end of chapter 16. Next week, we will be reading chapter 17 and beyond. Chapter 17 is called How the Balloon Was Launched. And so that does sound full of hope. You've been listening to KRBD Ketchikan and reading the classics. I hope that you'll be able to join us again next week. I have to say that my new expression at my house is going to be telling people to stop being a humbug. Stop being a humbug. It actually turns out that humbug was a phrase that came into being between 1730 and 1740, and it has to do with practicing deceit. And so if you intended to delude or deceive, you were considered a humbug. So there's your word of the day. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and thanks again for listening. You've been listening to KRBD Ketchikan.